Hello, my name is Kimo Oberlo, and I am one of the Lean Senseis at Structured Lean. This is now our fifth episode, but our fourth episode did have two parts, but in this series, we call this our fifth episode. And this is about the legacies that we leave behind and the lessons that we learn as we travel through life. And we have had the honor of talking to our master sensei, Mr. Roy Nakawe. Welcome, Roy.
Thanks, Kimo. Good to see you again.
And it's good to see you also. So today we will move on to the point when Roy retired, which was in 2002, correct?
That's correct.
And he continues on past 2002 to spread his learnings and influence. And I was lucky to also be the recipient of many of those learnings and influences. But now that you are no longer in the world of Toyota, how did you transition on to the next phase? Tell me about that.
Well, that's a whole new episode in my life for me. As you know, I talked to you about this in the first episode about putting together your own A3 for life. And I had to do that as well. I had to look at the professional side of it as well as the personal side and what would be my goals and objectives after I retired and what did I want to do with the rest of my life or at least the next phase of my life. And I moved with my wife. We decided to live up in the Pacific Northwest in the Cascades in Oregon. And so this is kind of enjoyable. Totally relaxing, different from living in a big city, traveling all over the world, etc.
So and, you did a little bit of retirement there.
Yeah. Actually,
yeah, I took it easy.
Yeah, I actually lived in the woods. There was a small village that I lived in. You've been there. It's only got less than 100 people living there, and there at that time there was no internet, nothing. I mean, if you wanted a DSL line, they used to laugh at you and says, what the hell is that? And, if you want internet, you got to go into the city, Eugene, you got to drive down 2 hours to down the mountain, find an internet cafe back then, 2003. But what happened was, as I said, Mr. Romano was my mentor during my career, and he came to visit me. He and his wife, to see how I was doing. He also had retired and he had set up his own business as a consulting firm. And so he told me that, Roy-san, you should leave a legacy. And I said, okay, that's interesting. I thought about that and I says, okay, I'll make my own A3 for life based on the legacy that I want to leave. And just about that time, after he left, about a week later, it's very strange, I got a call from an old friend of mine. You know him, Bob Bennett. He's a retired senior vice president for Toyota Motor Sales USA, Inc. And I learned that Bob and Mr. Romano had put together a consulting firm. They were actually doing consulting work together. And Bob called me and said, I need some help. I think Ken Amato may have talked to you about our company, and we have a client, name is Phillips Lighting, headquarters in Chicago, and we have a big project with them. They have two plants, both in Mexico. These are maquiladora plants. They have two of them in Tijuana and one in Juarez. And they're thinking of moving the plants to China. As you know, back then, all of the Mexican maquiladoras were considering moving to China because of costs and also because of the economics involved and everything. And so they wanted to get an assessment to see if it's really the way to go or the plants could be saved or what.
Well, so real quick, this is kind of what you've done all of your life is things like this.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Continue. Sorry to interrupt.
Okay. No, it's okay. I want you to do that. So ask questions. But so I said, okay, I talked to my wife and she says, well, Mr. Mano's an old friend of yours, a mentor, you owe him a lot. So maybe you should at least go do the assessment. So I did. I went and made the assessment. Bob was with me. I met at that time a gentleman by the name of Rajaman. He was the global vice president of operations for Philips Lighting headquarters in Chicago. And he had his project team with him, senior level. Bob had his consultants with him. There were about six of them altogether.
And you were one of them.
And I was one of them. And they just kind of followed me around. I just looked, took notes, walked around, took notes again. And then after about half a day, came back into the room and I gave them my assessment. And I says that if we were to do this, there's a possibility to save the plants. You can reduce your costs. You can do what I call 30-30-30 project. And it can be done, but it's going to take 3 years with a strong focus on the business side of it. And this is okay. That was interesting. I explained the steps involved that it would require, et cetera, and how you can do that. Or you can move it. If you were to move it, I said the cost to do that would be prohibitive, but it probably would be a 5-year plan for that. It can be done either way. But the cost to save it in the long run would probably be better from your standpoint, being that you are a customer-driven production company. And so your customers are the kind of customers that are different from the automotive. Primarily, their customers are the Home Depots, the Lowe's. And so you're talking about fast turnaround, and you have to have it there today.
Yes. So you're talking about Philips Lighting, right? Yeah. Completely
exactly.
Different.
Really different. You know, and then it's not like, you know, building to stock, and it's not like having inventory, you know, all this kind of stuff. I mean, you gotta get an order, you gotta turn around the order in 10 days, you know?
Turn and burn.
Yeah, turn and burn, we call it. Yeah, exactly. So then I flew back, talked to my wife, and she said, "Why don't I go?" I says, "Okay." And then later on, Bob had his meeting with Raj. I don't know exactly what they took place, but apparently Raj did not like Bob's proposal. So Bob called me and he says, you know, can you help us? What can you do? And I says, well, I'm not really interested at that time because I just had retired and I had no interest to go into the business at this point. I was still working on my A3. And he says, well, Raj liked what you said. He liked the approach that you took. And as you know, it's a little bit different than our approach. Our approach is a more traditional TPS approach, looking at a long term with a lot of people involved, consultants, et cetera. And then, you know, every week or every month, someone's there. And he says, you come in with the idea that you can do this, you know, with less people, less costs to them, as well as a 3-year plan, which is more effective. So I says, that's correct. And then he says, well, we'd like to put that proposal together. And I says, but you'll have to be involved in it. And I said, no, at the time, I was not interested. So later on, I got a call from Mr. Mano saying, you need to reconsider, you know, basically calling me that I owe him. And so we talked about it. And then my wife and I decided that, if we're going to do this, let's set up our own business, because I didn't want to work for somebody anymore. I didn't want to work for a company. I didn't want to work for another, you know, as you know, another consultant.
You had enough years
company.
Of that.
Yeah, I had enough years of that. And so we decided, okay, let's do it differently. Then, and I told this to Bob, I says, I'll create my own company, B2B, between you and I, and we'll go into this. So that's how it started. Did that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. So that was your first engagement was with Bob, and then Ken Amano kind of coerced you back into it. Mm-hmm. And so how long were you retired for?
For about at that time, it was like about 8 months or so.
So just enough time to move up to Blue River.
Right, exactly. And get settled in and building the house and everything else.
Yes, so, okay.
But you know, we did this, and they agreed to my terms, and that I said, okay, I would be responsible for this. I would need one other person to help me, one of Bob's guys at that time. And then Bob said he would come and, you know, take a look every once in a while. Ken would also. And I said, fine. But basically, I would run the show. So how I did this, or what I did, just to let you know, was that I looked at it from a business point of view and not from a lean point of view. Okay, I always look at things from a business point of view. So I had a long discussion with Raj, find out what was important to him, what was his goals and objectives, what were the long-term targets, what were the short-term targets, and what he needed to do. And then he and I started to develop a strategy together. Because this is based on a new kind of business. I told him that your business is not automotive. It is consumer-driven, and it is commodity-driven. So
right, commodity is very fast moving.
Right, fast moving, fast turnaround, and then replenishment, as you know. And so, even though we're talking about manufacturing, because they were making the lighting fixtures, the ballasts, and the bulbs, etc., there, we're really looking at it from a logistics standpoint. I said, and more, we're looking at it, we should look at it from a based on, you know, customer driven, order driven. How quick can you turn around the order? And fill the order and be able to, so based on fill rate, based on what is really logistics type talking is what you want to call it that.
Okay.
And so I said to him, we need to put together a strategic Kaizen and then go into a systems Kaizen. So I said to him, we need to look at sales growth, volume stability and growth, profit stability, innovation, soft and hard, and people development and sustainability.
Okay, and hold on. Before you get too far down that line, just so that everybody is clear, you had mentioned two things there, systems Kaizen, and what was the other one?
Strategic Kaizen.
And strategic Kaizen. And so looking at a high level and being able to improve the whole system and how you're going to do that, correct?
Correct. That's correct.
Okay. Okay, continue. Sorry.
Okay, so first, what I had to do was create a sense of the urgency in their leaders and their people. Okay, I had to introduce them to what we call a more practical approach to lean, again, with the focuses on the finance. So the only thing I wanted to know was the turnaround time, the speed of the turnaround time, the delivery, and then cash register rings. And I said, we need to look at it from a long-term standpoint to sustain, but we need to do a short-term standpoint in order to survive. So find the money in order to save your plant and save your jobs. That was a slogan I helped them create. Okay. And then everything
was
based,
money.
Yeah, everything was based on quarterly results and review based on quarterly results because, you know, they are a stock market company. And it was based on using a Hoshin Kanri and using A3 management systems. So top down, bottom up. You know this, yeah?
Yes, yes. You have taught me this.
Yeah. Okay. And then the evidence was that they did this, that all the plants did. It took them just about 2 years to get this in the system wise and then be able to sustain it in the third year. And why I said it take 3 years is because this was a non-union plant. If this was a union plant, chemo, it would take 5 years. Okay.
If you could get it done in 5 years, yes.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then the evidence for this was that, you know, in the plant in Tijuana, they call it PLEM, P-L-E-M. They had a wall. The whole wall of the plant was covered with papers of A3 projects, Shikumi's, eight-step problem solving, all showing money, U.S. dollars, savings. Oh. Okay? By the time the 3 years was over, that wall was covered completely from top to bottom, left to right. And so what happened was that by year two, they had started to show some financial stability. Okay? And now the plant was moving in the right direction. And Raj could understand it because he came for quarterly reviews every time. He and Joe Almond with Bob Ciccone, I can name Dorothy Hartwick, they all came together. All these people come from Chicago to do the reviews, and they talk about what are the next steps involved and how they're going to go. And Molina was responsible for the plant in Tijuana, and Enrique was responsible for the plants in Juarez. Later on, of course, all of these people were promoted. Molina became VP of Tijuana operations. Luis Kennedy became the director for Lean for the lighting group. And Raj became an executive VP for the lighting group, as well as the later the medical group in Redmond, Washington, which he asked me to help him there in 2010. But for me, what was interesting was what did I learn from this little project that I did? In 2008, I said, okay, I had enough with you guys. I'm done. You know, there's no more I can do here. So you guys are on your own.
You were with them for about 5 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
They asked me to stay longer, so beyond the 3 years. And so it was a good project for Mr. Mano and Bob. They were very happy with that. But what I learned was that, okay, for me, my method and my way of doing things, I can do this outside the automotive world. That was one. Two was that now I had my own company, Blue River Venture Group, and I can do things my own way with my own approach, and using the approach of people focus and long-term relationships. So those were the key things for me that I took away. Does that make sense?
Yes. Oh, yes. And I've seen you work, especially with the people-focused long-term relationships, and how you have impacted people, and but also impacted companies. And so that brings us back to what were the results? What ultimately happened at Philips at those Mexico plants?
The plants are still there. The plants became more competitive. They did not move the plants to China. In fact, the plants were financially stable as well. They improved the customer turnaround time, as well as the what I call it, their fill rate performance was at 95%. And before that, it was at 62%. And more importantly was that they were able to attain new business.
So yeah, now, it's I'm sorry. It's so much fun when you do something like that, because I do remember a plant where you remember Terry Kirksey?
Yeah.
Yes, and you introduced me to him, and we were in the plant in Knoxville, and mm-hmm. they were going to move it to Mexico, and we were able to not, and it was so nice, and mm-hmm. and same with that. It's nice when you do things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that was your first venture, and then keep going from there.
Okay, well then, you know, the news got out that I was doing consulting. So I get a call from Lars Ulrich. He's a friend of mine from Bosch Stuttgart. I've been knowing the people at Bosch for a long time, back in my Denso days. And so he asked me to support and help them in Toluca, Mexico, with their plants there, and then also in Anderson, South Carolina. And, you know, I think it's important that you were involved, especially the one with Debbie Kropp. Do you remember her, the HR manager from
Anderson? Oh,
yes.
Debbie is a wonderful woman, and we still stay in touch.
Okay, good, because I asked you to help me there, and you actually were closer to her living in Tennessee, and just going over to South Carolina was easier than me flying from the West Coast out there.
Yes.
But what was interesting for me was that, you know, she told me that she had the story, you know, that her plant was being, Anderson at the time was already doing some downsizing. They were moving products out to low-cost countries, and they had to compete. And they saw that their future was becoming very dim at the plant there. And so she asked me to help her put together a strategy in order to make the plant to survive and to project or be able to prosper in order to avoid internal global competition. Does that make sense to you? Internal global competition? Other Bosch plants
steal
the business. Right.
That's right. Global on a global scale, yes. And so it was critical for them to improve themselves in order to compete on the global scale internally.
That's right. Okay, because they had to compete with other Bosch plants, the one in the new plant that was in San Luis Potosi that was coming up in Mexico. They had to compete against the one in China, which is just outside of Shanghai in Wuxi. And they also had to compete with the German plants, actually, in Stuttgart as well, for the new businesses that they had. And they didn't really have a strategy for this, how to do this, or they didn't have any kind of systems Kaizen in place to do this. And again, I did the same thing there. We worked with her to set up the same opportunities that we looked at. I met with the management team, talked about what was important for them, how they're going to do this, and what are the key points for them, similar to what I did with the people from Philips. And we focused on not only leveling up the management, but also the supervisory, so that the team, that the next level, so they could be ready to take over once the current management move on. Because this again was a way of doing things for them. And I think you already know some of that stories. Maybe you might want to share some of your own experiences working with Anderson there. Yeah.
Oh yes, but. So what you're talking about like succession planning and things like that, which they had never really thought about that before, mm-hmm. and someone would leave, and then there would be a hole to fill, and to
exactly
make sure that you put in those systems down there that that complete a plant. You know, so it's not only the methodologies that we employ on the floor, mm-hmm. and in the office, but all throughout the organization with things like succession planning to make sure that there is somebody there when anybody leaves that can step into that position.
Yeah. And then, you know, so for them, again, just to make come to the point here, the final results for them was that they were able to maintain their level. They were not able to lose the businesses that they had gained. They were able to
sustain.
The pace of improvements was faster. They were able to do things in a much better way. They didn't have a downward trend for as far as people are concerned. In other words, they didn't let people go or lay off people. They were able to maintain that. And now they could plan for the future in order to move forward. And so by 2010, this is in 2009 and 10, they had a better view of their, as far as their vision is concerned, which they never had, or how to put together a new business plan based on that, how to go into it, to look at it from a business structure standpoint instead of just running an operation structure standpoint. And then finally, I think what was more important was that they were able to push back against some of the competition, because now instead of losing the opportunities or the new businesses, they were gaining the business and they were actually taking some back from people like the plants in San Luis Potosi, which happened. And later on, when I went to San Luis Potosi in 2018, I saw some of that. But more importantly was that they really had created a sense of urgency there. And so was really nice to see this. And I really enjoyed going to South Carolina because Debbie was a special person in my life.
She was. She is a very special person. And, you know, when we bring this all kind of back around, we talk about the people, and mm-hmm. you have done in your consulting life very much so like you have done in your professional life. I'm not saying that consulting isn't a profession, but you've connected those people and connected with people and always made it personal, because I know that I have known you for over 15 years, and mm-hmm. As you go throughout, you touch a lot of people and you touch a lot of places. You've gone to a lot of places with these people in these networks that you have.
Yeah, like, for example, well, let's talk about the next one, because the people in Bosch Toluca introduced me to the president of Volkswagen Mexico, Mr. Lindner. And he in turn asked me to visit them in Puebla. And I did. I took a look at their operations. He asked me to put together a presentation for them that they would like to help, ask me to help them. And you were involved in this, if you remember. We started to set up a logistics side of it as well as the manufacturing side.
I do remember this point.
Yeah. And then you were working with Nadia. I was working with Luis Pinedo. And we were putting together the program for them with Otmar Hauk, if you remember. And so, you know, they in turn like what I was doing. And they also then decided to bring me to Germany. I then asked you to go with me as well. So we went to Volkswagen Wolfsburg, if you remember. We worked with Thomas Hegel Gunther. We worked with Mr. Qual. You worked with other people as well there in the organization. And so, as you know, one thing led to the other, yeah? And that became a big project for us. It was lasted a long time, years and years, from 2005, I think. Even today, we're still doing it, yeah?
Yes, and you're absolutely correct. We're still involved with them today, and the longevity of the relationship that we have had through what you initially did with Volkswagen is really incredible, because it has been years and years and years, and you've been all over the world and into different plants with them, and it is a great relationship that you developed first, beginning with Lindner and Otmar Hauk.
And then later on, as you know, I went to Dr. Heischmann, Dr. Neubauer, Dr. Unza in Germany, the production board members. But for me, there were two things that I want to tell you about the Volkswagen that was interesting for me, and that really was special. You remember in 2008, there was a financial crisis, yeah? A global financial crisis.
Oh, yes, absolutely, I do.
Yeah. And if you remember being in the consulting business at that time, external consulting, a lot of companies says, we can't afford that now because money was tight. Yeah.
We're always the first to go.
Yeah. Always the first to go. And so it was kind of interesting because at that time, you know, you could see that they had to cut back on a lot of the expenses for consulting groups. This is not only consulting in lean, but for engineering consulting, for other kind of consulting, et cetera. And yet, for some reason, because of the way I did things, both Dr. Heischmann and Dr. Neubauer, who were the production board members for Volkswagen supervisory board, decided that there would be only two consulting firms that they would be using during this crisis period. And so from 2008, 2009, 2010, et cetera, on. And that it would be Porsche Consulting, which was their own company that they owned.
Correct.
And Blue River Venture Group, Roy Nakawa's company.
Yes.
It was really special for me because, you know, I was able to continue working with them, as you know. And so I still was able to do this with them. And I was not a big company like a Porsche with 1,000 consultants, you know, just basically a one-man show, if you want to call it that. And so it was continuing for you and I at that time. If you remember, you worked with Alexander Heinzel, yeah?
Yes, I was going to say it was a two-man show. I was there with you.
It was fun, wasn't it?
It was. It was a very good engagement.
Yeah. And so we learned a lot about not only the people, but we learned about the food. I think you went to several of the their soccer games. Is that right?
I did. Yes. Yeah. I mean, it was very good. They would take us. I mean, I remember the, and I'm sure you remember also, like the things like the Christmas marks, because we were over there. During those periods of time.
Yeah. And so, you know, later on, of course, the other one that was very big for me was China. You know, Volkswagen has a joint venture with the Chinese government, FAW. And so they asked me to go there to set up their shop floor management at that time. And then I did that in 2014 to 2015. Or the 6 car plants that they have there. In Changchun, there were 2 car plants. And then in Chengdu, there was the car plant and 2 engine plants. And then in Fushan, the new one, where they had the Audi plant there as well. And so being able to do that in China was very special.
Yeah, so FAW is Volkswagen China.
Yes, it's just the joint venture between the central government of China and FAW company and Volkswagen China as well.
Okay.
Yeah. But what was interesting for me was that it was the opportunity again, can I move an army? You understand that word? Move the army?
Yes.
What I mean by that is that can I run a plant of 6,000 workers to do lean the way I expect it to be done, similar to what I did when I was at Denso and at Toyota. You understand?
Wow, yes. But you're now changing moving an army. I understand the term now.
Yeah. It's not a plant of 300 people. It's not a one plant, you know, where you got all the operators in one plant. You're talking about, you know, looking at a whole car plant, as you know, is different. Yeah, you got first you got a press center, then you have a body shop, and then you have a paint shop, and then you have the final assembly, and then you have the logistics center, then you have the supplier logistics center, right?
That is all correct.
And then you have the outbound, and then you have the inbound, right?
Yeah, all of those things have to work in concert with each other.
And then you have the engineering group, you have the development center, you have what they call the pilot halls. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes. Oh, I absolutely know what you're talking about.
You're talking about what? Average 6,000 workers, 7,000 workers maybe?
Yes, I know Toyota Georgetown started with one plant and it was 5,000 workers. Then when they built the second plant, I think it went up to 8,000 workers.
Yeah.
So can you move little cities?
Right. So again, can you move an army, right?
Can you move an army? Yes. Yes, yeah. Especially, you know, with Toyota in Georgetown, I do recall, you know, many times we go in there. So in our post Toyota careers, we have been influencing a lot of companies and trying to get them to turn and moving that army. You know, with Toyota, the army is already moving. They're all moving in the same direction. And right. And so it is significantly more difficult to maneuver and move that army when they are not moving all in the same direction.
Exactly. And when they have different agendas. Huh?
Yes.
You know, because as you know, each of the, for example, the body shop would say, oh, we don't need lean because we're doing fine. You know, we have overproduction, but nobody cares. You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. They have so much stuff around
that
they never fail to supply the next process with something.
Right. Or the paint shop, which says, well, what goes in does not come out. And so therefore you have to change your schedule assembly.
Yeah. And that's a constant thing.
Yeah. And so planning department is actually always changing the schedules constantly, right? And so logistics have to then adjust each time. Yeah?
Yes. Yes. All the time. Constantly adjusting.
So, you know, this is how things go. But anyway, as I said, these are just some of my stories after I retired. I still am doing this, as you know. What I would like to do, if this makes sense to you, maybe you and I can talk about this, is that, you know, from my standpoint, you were very helpful for me because you were always there to see what I was doing. And not only in Wolfsburg, but also, you know, in the different places in Germany that we visited, when we did for Exalta, for example.
Yes,
when we
Italy,
did, you know,
in Balzoni.
Yeah, Balzoni. Yes. You know, what did you learn from all this? Yeah.
Oh, there are so many things that I have learned from all this, and I do really appreciate the lessons that you have given me. Some of them were hard lessons, and that is true. But the lessons about people ultimately are really what I have taken to the core and preach and practice when I go into a place is they have to listen to the people. And sometimes I think the reason that we are successful at doing what we do is because everybody cannot listen to the people. If you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And so I was going to start summing things up, but let me hear some more words,
because I was heading forward. So in order to bring it all together, again, going back to my A3, you heard the professional side. So let me tell you about the personal side of my A3.
Of course.
Okay. Some of the gains that I got from this venture that I was involved in doing. One was that for me, it was, you know, for example, the travel, and then cuisine and culture, new friendships, all of these things I combined together. As an example, this you remember Roberto Scotti, Bolzoni, you know him well.
We were with him in Italy.
Yes, and he took me to the White Truffles Festival in Alba, where I was able to. I knew a lady from the name of Anna Albona, who was the owner of Marchetti di Barolo in Alba. And so she invited us to come to the White Truffles Festival there. Roberto went with me. And so we were
How did you meet her?
I actually met her on my way back from a Volkswagen trip to Wolfsburg. I was sitting in the airport in Frankfurt at the duty-free shop, and I was looking at the wines. Because my next trip was after I finished with Volkswagen, and I was going to visit Roberto in Milan and Piacenza. And then from there, he and I was going to spend the weekend looking for wines. And so I ran into her and I was looking at the wine of her wines. And she said, "You like this?" And I says, "Well, it depends." I says, "I'm a big Brunello guy, not so much Barolo. Barolo's too big for me sometimes, too robust." And she says, then you must come to my winery. I says, "You have one?" She says, "Yes, yes, I do." I says, "Where do you live?" She says, "In Alba." I says, "Oh, I'm going there this weekend." She says, "Then you must come to see me because I am going home right now to Alba." And that's how I met her.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting story.
And
okay.
What was fascinating, though, the story, it went further. I happened to be sitting in a restaurant called Valentino's in Santa Monica. And I mentioned to the owner of Valentino's, his name is Pietro Salvaggio. And I said, "Pietro, I went to Alba. I went to the White Truffles Festival. And I met a lady by the name of Anna Albona." And he says, "I know her. I'm her customer."
Oh, wow. So he gets wine from her.
Yes.
Huh.
But you know, that's one example. Another example is a little bit more personal. Keith and I had to go to visit a client in Arkansas. First, the plant was in Missouri, then later on, the one in Arkansas. And while we were there, Keith said, "Hey, you know, there's a Japanese American museum in Arkansas with the internment camp for World War II. Let's go look at it." And there was a chance. I never knew about that. So it was something interesting to see that was different for me. So that's kind of a personal thing. And then when I was in China in Foshan, I'm a big martial arts guy. So at that time, Mr. Ma told me that, "Mr. Nakawa, you like Chinese martial arts?" And I says, "Yes." And he says, "The Ip Man Festival Museum is located here."
You know, I've seen both of those movies, or I don't know how many, three of them.
Yeah.
That's such a wonderful a story. Yes.
Yeah. So I went to visit the museum. I went to see how he did his training, etc. And so that was as well, you know, different. And then I have many other stories, but what is for me is the most important thing that came out of all this is that, you know, to see working with Keith, having to see him grow and go find his own way. He creates his own teams now, as you know, Mario and Aurelio in Mexico, Christian and Ronald in Europe, and then you as well, and just now starting to expand and being able to take it to the next level on his own with creating this kind of podcast, etc. So yeah, in the end, it's about the people, but for me, it's also the stories that go with it. Does that make sense? That's my final.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it really is, you know. I know. So for those of you who don't know, both Roy and I are from Hawaii, and we do what we call talk story, in which we talk about these stories that we have lived. And that's what it's all about. It's about the people, and it's about the stories that we create as we go through. So I do want to say, Roy, it's been wonderful. I appreciate the time that you have taken to lay out this all before us, to hear about how you started, who your mentors were, because I know that I definitely refer to you as my mentor, and how they influenced you. And once again, I just hope you had some hard lessons from them, because I know that I had some hard lessons from you.
Oh yeah, but same thing.
Yeah.
Same
yeah.
Boy.
Good. But you know,
what
the stories
around comes around.
It does. Oh yeah, it does. And I hope that I'm getting to that age where I could go around on somebody else. But the stories that you shared with us about how you developed and how you interacted and how you influenced others and how you were influenced by others. And it hopefully, you know, you have influenced our listeners a little bit, and maybe that they will also think about things slightly differently. And you have heard us, for those out there, you've heard us reference a lot of different tools and methodologies, such as PDCA or Plan, Do, Check, Act. You can find out more about these at our website, structuredlean.com. But I would one more time like to give Roy one quick opportunity to emphasize a point or impart another quick piece of wisdom to our listeners.
Leave a legacy. Mahalo, King. Thank you.
Much mahalo, Roy. As always, the time you have given us here is highly appreciated, and I do get touched by the things that you say. It has been a pleasure to mediate this and put down these legacies that you are leaving behind as you travel through life. And if I can close with this, I just want to encourage our listeners to put people first. Remember, it's a two-way street, and when both parties win, life is just a whole lot better. But please, you know, stay tuned, because there will be more to come. Thank you very much for listening.